afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. It's another day in spring, but I think I heard somebody say snow in the Northeast. Well, I'm really sorry for that, but I'm sure your summer will come soon. We here in the South, today I just planted my morning glories. But you know what? Those darn lizards, I think they're probably going to eat the seeds before I even get them to grow. I'll tell you, I don't know what it is this year, but the lizards, they are all over the creation. I don't know if they're getting stirred up under the ground by the Earth's energy. I don't know if they're seeking out food. I don't know what's going on, or is it just getting too hot too quick? But you know what? We always need to think about how we are as people. A lot of things start to shake us up. What do? Search out what we need to make us feel better. But then maybe we turn around and we look and say, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go take this other option. I'm going to go sit in the sun. I'm going to go have a drink. I'm going to go move to a different place. I need another job. And we're always looking outside of ourselves. Do you ever look inside of yourself? Today, we are going to be talking about the art of healing art. The name of the book is The Art of Healing Art, The Keys to Power and Awareness by Jacqueline Ripstein. I don't know why, but I really want to say her name like Jacqueline. But anyway, so that's her. She will be with us today. And you know what? I'm really finding that this is a new words, new definitions, new languages that a lot of people are speaking. Awareness, faith, hope, survival, chaos, confusion. You know, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Awakening, all I remember is putting my feet on the ground and getting my butt out of bed. This kind of language was not discussed then. I don't even know if it was around then. Maybe it wasn't those little philosophy, you know, encyclopedias, but I know in the 70s when I had a nice, good Jesuit college experience with that, I copied all the words out of the philosophy encyclopedia, put them on my paper, handed it in, I got a good A. Plagiarism at its best. I have no clue what that meant. But isn't it now that maybe the words were starting to look at them and say, it's time to figure out what's going on in the world? How can we make it a better place? And what is our place in it? Because you know what? There are so many changes in the world. Economy, work, life, environment, health. We're just up against the wall. And at any time, sometimes you almost feel like you are just a speck or hair away from hitting that wall and turning to dust. Isn't that where we are all now? And I call that the state of confusion and chaos. And we'll be talking with Jacqueline today about that. So welcome to the show, Jacqueline. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. So how did you like me say Jacqueline? I don't know where that's coming out of my head.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you here today as well. And it's a wonderful opportunity to bring out these words that are so common now, as you're saying, and sometimes even prohibited in the past.
Yeah. And I don't think we even understood them. I mean, I, you know, almost 60, I grew up and, you know, the idea was you get out, you get a job, you better make enough money, and then you make sure that job will last you forever, and that's the way of the world. And then all of a sudden, I mean, wow, you know, what solar flare hit the earth, you know, in the past 10 years, because all of those things we thought have now gone to dust, don't you think?
Yeah. The world is totally changing, you know. Masters, real masters would talk about it and let us know. And I don't think like anything, you know, it's like we go to sleep and then we wake up and then we just think it's another day, but it's another different day nowadays.
Yeah. It's, you know, things are so different. Even the words, you know, that you use in your book, I find sometimes if you're really not up on it, you really are looking at that book going, I do not know what you're saying. Because, you know, I would say to some of the doctors, well, you know, cardiologists, you're dealing with the heart and, you know, well, it's a lot of awakening time. And they look at me going like, you've got 10 eyes and an antenna. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and you know, I think maybe some people in fear of the words are holding themselves back. What have you found, like, when you talk to other people that really don't know you? How has that been, you know, affected?
You know, for years, my daughter, especially my oldest daughter, Stephanie, would tell to me, Mommy, speak the language of people. You know, you're talking a scientific language, which I really, I'm an artist, but I really never even went to school for art, you know, with life itself. But it's just the way I bring it down, and it's given to me that has this high consciousness vibrating within each word, you know. Lately, the way I see it is that we say certain things and they are so empty, and words can contain so much, like a piece of art, you know. It can be full of soul vibrations, so it can be full of low emotional vibrations, and there's a big difference in energy between those two pieces. Where a word is the same. And in another book I did that's never been published yet, kind of like Lord of the Rings. And one of the things in one of the chapters is about the words and how evil beings or low vibrational beings nurture themselves through low vibrational words. So when you have a book that has higher consciousness, you also encounter words that will vibrate with you in a higher level of consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and what I tell listeners, too, when we're talking about vibration, about high energy, low energy, positive or negative, I like to say, if picture yourself as a five-year-old child, and your mother says, oh, I can't wait to go see the Easter Bunny, let's go. What happens? You feel up. You feel light. You can't wait to go. You have happiness. You have no judgment. You're open, and you're ready to run. Now, let's do that same scenario, and your mother says, I hate bunnies, you'll never go, and I'm not taking you, and what do? You go down, which is a negative, and you sit, and you sulk, and you look, and you wonder why, and you get all these fears around you. Why can't I go? Why is she afraid? Oh, blah, blah, you know, and then you find yourself saying, when you get older, my mother never liked the bunnies. I don't like bunnies. I don't like Easter. You know,
exactly.
Therefore, that's a perpetuation of those fears, and that's really where we are now, is that the world has carried so much garbage and baggage with it, and, you know, they're just, like, dragging all of these decades and centuries of stuff that eventually it's just going to implode upon itself, and I think that's where we are, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important what you're saying, because not only for the bunny, what about the art teacher that kind of like blocked your creativity and frustrated so many people to have told me, you know, my art teacher told me I'm no good. And then we believe that. And then we leave sometimes a path where passion was there. And that happens a lot of times. And, you know, one time I gave a workshop for elderly people in North Florida. And in the university, and this woman approached me, she must have been in her 80s, and she said to me, I used to love to paint, and I used to love to express myself. I looked at her, and I said to her, are you alive? She said, yes. I said, it's never too late, go back. Do it. So, you know, it's just a matter of breaking those patterns that we leave attached to because of the fear of letting them go. And that's how art can really help people, because by opening channels of creativity, you're really coming out of the box, you know, to bring out talents and gifts we all contain within one way or another. Not that everybody's going to be a writer or an author or a singer, but we all have a gift within us to give to the world. To discover that gift is part of my mission to inspire people's lives.
And what I think I find, too, is that, you know, we were all pretty much grew up knowing, us of us older ages, knowing that we were told you have to give, you have to do, you have to give, you have to do, you have to give, you have to do. And that's the way of the world, you know. Did it bring a paycheck home? If it didn't bring a paycheck home, pretty much almost everybody was told, go back out again until you do, you know.
Yeah.
And when you didn't you weren't working on getting that paycheck, then you better be working on pleasing somebody else, family, friends, you know, relatives, whatever that might be. There was always this outward stuff. And it really left a lot of people empty. I think it did damage their spirits. I know. I mean, when you could, I think definitely it did. Because if you pass nursing homes now or assisted living, what do you see? You see empty faces of women and men sitting in their doorways. That's it. You don't see any of them saying, you know, hey, you know, I used to do this really cool dance, you know, or let's turn on the radio, you know, and do stuff like that. Or, hey, I'm going to turn my hair blue today, you know, or maybe I want to be purple today. But they don't even have that that release where they feel safe to be whoever they are or, you know, they are. And there's so much locked in there. There's so much potential locked in there that no one really will allow it because, hey, what are they – and I think it's because of the past. What do they used to do with people who used to dance in the streets and turn their hair purple and, you know, before the year 2000? They put them in the nut house.
I was going to say exactly.
Yeah. So everybody's panicking. I'm going to go to the nut house. I better not do that. You must conform or that's where you'll be. And haven't you found that too? I know I have found that constantly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I thought really important to, you know, bring out this book to the world, which was 3 years of doing it. And to bring out an opportunity of seeing exactly face-to-face of what you're talking about, but understanding it from another level of consciousness.
Right. And how did you, what you said in the right in the very beginning of the book about it being a mirror back, can you tell us a little bit about that, what that means? It says, let each painting be the mirror of your soul. Because in your book, let's just describe your book a little bit to the listeners. It has several chapters, and in the beginning of the chapter, there are pictures of art that you have done. Can you tell us about the art and then your little lessons and how they work?
Yeah. Well, first of all, as you know, I'm an artist for 38 years, so that has been my main experience really in life. And one of the things I learned through my art was that I become the tool. I become the brush. I am not the message itself. You know, you become just a tool for God to give you the messages, and the paintings have been tested by a few scientific people and shown how they have a very high vibration themselves. So what happens is that when I got sick years ago, in 2005, for 3 years I could barely talk and I could barely function per day. First, I thought I had a brain tumor, and I had to encounter that. I had to go for testing, and it was a big thing. But then, little by little, you know, as I gave in, I just started hearing the book being dictated to me. And each image of a painting, a certain painting, is like a portal. Imagine, you know, like a building with many floors, and each painting will take you to another floor, another dimension, another step of consciousness. And the important thing is that when you follow it, you can be able to open within yourself those levels of consciousness. If you go to my website, JacquelineRepstein.com, you will see I have more than 6,000 testimonials of people with my art.
And, you know, your art is absolutely fabulous because I find that when you have the three pictures and you show them, you know, as the regular picture and then they show it at black light and then they show it meshed. So can you explain why that's such a difference that you felt like to make it that three-dimensional? I guess it's three-dimensional. Is that considered three-dimensional or no? Or is it multi-more?
Yeah, it's a way of three-dimensional. Well, what happened is that I used to have the agents of Salvador Dali in the 80s and the 84, 1984, mm-hmm. and I used to say I want to bring down and show people the light of God, and people would laugh at
right.
me, like you were saying, words at that time, or even, and imagine me talking about invincibility in the 80s. It was like, what are you talking about? You know, what
right.
is this? And people would even say to me, okay, go to the streets like the emperor, you know, the story of the emperor with the clothing. And yes, I dared to take the step. I dared to say, yes, God, use me. Please show me how to show people the light of God. So in 1983, I started the research. 1986, I patented for the first time invisible techniques in oils, which is the first time ever done in as an oil technique, and it's a new technique developed for the arts. So mm-hmm. what happened was that I came along, and little by little, my art was guiding me to how to do it, you know, how to develop it. So, for example, when you have in lesson three of life, you have a boat. And at the beginning, you see the pieces of the boat, which if you put this with life, how many times do we feel in pieces after the storm? And it could be a storm, but storm also relating to storms of life, trials of life, a death, a divorce, you know, a loss, anything that could really be part of that. And many times we feel like the boat in pieces and destroyed. And when I put on the black light, the same painting shows a whole boat sailing, which is the image of your soul. Your soul, your outside illusion world can be collapsing, but the soul can never, ever be destroyed. And I started, and I'm talking about this one because this painting is from 1986, is one of the first ones I did with that technique. So one of the things that you have here is something that Sandy is giving you hope, Sandy bringing you up from that low emotional level where we are, because when people are in that low emotional level, it is not easy to step up. You know, there's few things
right.
that can ignite them to go up, and then the body starts hurting, and then the body gets... You're a doctor, and the body then gets hit by that low emotional, and a whole cycle just starts with sickness and imbalance and, you know, many things that happen.
Well, you know, when I saw your pictures, my first thought that came to my mind was, some people will see one thing, another person will see another thing. And there's so many times when we're saying something to somebody, we say, look at the picture. And they're like, what am I supposed to see? And the answer is you're not supposed to see anything. You're supposed to see what you will see. And I think that's in life, too. So let's say something happens. You can't always take it at what we believe to be a reality of what it is at face value. Look at the lesson behind it. Look at what it's trying to tell you. How does it make you feel? So really, your photos are more of going around that subterrane of 360, you know, to be able to look at something differently, you know. That's how I saw it. And so if I'm looking at, you know, the boat with the water, what I'm thinking of, there is no beginning or end. You're just there. You're, you know, you're in life. And, you know, it can be calm. It can be not calm. But you're still okay. You know, everything is still okay. The water is still there. The sun still comes up. That's the nature of what it is. you know, so people can look at it differently for each person who they are. And the more people that see, the more things, it kind of, each of those words would be something that would describe potentially maybe what they need to look at, or maybe where they're stuck, or maybe something that they say, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. And that's what you're really looking for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you're saying, because the art is so unusual, I think the book is too, in the sense of, first of all, it's never been done, the piece of art would connect you to the other side, you know, to the invisible side of life. Second, it has a very high vibrational level proven by scientific people. Third, you know, they say an image is worth a thousand words. So just what you said a little while ago, what people would see, and we were talking about the mirror of your soul, when people see a piece of art of mine, they will see exactly like you defined it through their own life experience. Maybe in the painting there's something else, and something they're seeing I'm not seeing, which is perfectly fine. What they are seeing comes from their own life experience. What I'm seeing comes from my own life experience. What you're seeing comes from yours. So nobody can tell you, no, it's your life experience.
Right, just like
that's
we were
why
saying.
I caught it.
Right,
yeah.
And just like we were
that's
saying
why
before
I
about
caught
the
it
rabbit.
The mirror of your soul. Yeah,
that's
sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right,
yeah.
Because when we were saying about the rabbit, you know, to me a rabbit is a great thing. To other people, a rabbit's a pain in the butt that eats through all your gardens. To somebody else, a rabbit is something great for a child. For someone else, a rabbit is something that ends up on your dish. You know, there could be a zillion different things, but it's based upon your experience with that. And then say, okay, well, I'm going to base it on my experience, but maybe I'm going to look past my experience and see what else it tells me. And that's really what your book is all about. What past your total experience or your habits or your beliefs or those ingrained and entrenched words that are in your head is to learn a new language. And I think your book is the best thing about learning. You know, when you say the keys to power and awareness, I really think of this book as like a template for learning a new language to be able to create awareness. And a lot of people are having a hard time saying, I'm hearing those words, but I don't know what it means. So when I when I got the book, I pretty much just read it from front to back. You know, I always write in them and folding pages and everything else. And then I go back a few days later to see what I underlined. And it does tell simple stories, and it does help, gives you ideas to say, perhaps this, perhaps that, look at this, look at that. There are lessons, there are reflections, the art is here, it's described, and it tells you so much information and inspirational quotes that someone will find something to be able to understand, and then you just start to compound. You say, okay, I understand that. Okay, next step. Okay, now I got that. So eventually the book will be, you'll learn the language, and I think that's your, I see as the goal of the book.
I love it, yes. I agree with you, and nobody ever told me that, you know, and I love the way you defined it, and I would add to it that that's how the lessons are made. You see from lesson one, it's called Man and the Cosmos. Then the architect of his own destiny, then life, so the burden of life. So it's taking people by the hand to who we are even before we're born, man and the cosmos. What is up there is down. Who I am is a totality of many things, not just pieces of what I think I am. And then it takes you, the architect, you know, what is to be an architect of your own life, of your own destiny. So it's taking people, I call it like peeling an onion. It's taking people step by step by the hand as a guidance to peel the onion and find, go within and within and within yourself. I don't know if you felt it as you read it, but the more you read, the more deeper you were going. Did you feel
yeah,
that?
And And it does make sense, and it's just like learning language. So can we talk a little bit about learning language? And I'd like to talk about a few different words in here that I know that a lot of people are really having a hard time with. When we say dark shadow energy, or when we say things like hope and awareness, you know, what does that mean to you? And because dark energy, to some people, they're like, you know, hey, I live in New Orleans. Dark energy to everybody here means voodoo, and I'm going to do some kind of magic on you, and it's going to be the stuff that crawls up out of the swamps in the graveyards. That's what they think energy, dark energy is. So, you know, there is a lot of different variations on it, and we really want to come to raising our ideas about what dark energy is. Can you tell us what yours is?
Yes, absolutely. Especially being an artist, you know, one of the things that I say in the book and I talk about it is there's two forces in the universe, light and darkness. And those two forces are within everything else and us, including us, which we sometimes call the ego, you know, the divine and the ego. Those are forces that can never be destroyed, none of them. When they say I can destroy the ego, no, you cannot destroy the ego. But yes, you can use the ego to move above, you know, above it and go further on through it to the light. So I love, again, the way you're handling this and bringing along out-of-the-box things. Now I understand why you have the title for your radio show. It's really wonderful. No, really, it's wonderful because you're bringing things out of the box that are important for people to understand. So from the point of view of talking of something negative energy or a shadow,
right?
Negative energy would be energy that's low, that's dense, that's affecting us, you know, in a way that, let's say you're joyous, right? And you have... At that point that you have joy, your energy is speeding up. Well, what happens is the moment you get hit by negative energy or low vibrational energy is that you're brought down to a deeper level. Now, when you talk about it with, you put it together with colors. Let me start with colors, okay? When you go through dark colors, dark colors weight, they bring down, they have a tendency to bringing, you know, a weight down, a closeness to it. And they have a way of getting us involved into that same darkness. And there's many shades to that, you know, gray or that black or that darkness, many shades. But within that, when you talk about the black color, you are talking of no color, void of color. You have a black color who does not reflect the light. When you're talking of light and when you're talking of, you know, white colors, you are talking about unity of colors, reflection of colors, vibration of colors. So you're talking of another different level. Now, let's put it to emotions and words. When I'm depressed, well, guess what? If I say it's a great day, I'm not seeing colors that day, right? So even in our speech, we're using the words without knowing what we're tapping into. And just by saying it's a great day, I'm already saying I'm depressed.
Right.
Or I'm seeing through the eyes of depression or sadness. So... everything we're doing, when a thought is, I'm not okay, I'm used, I, you know, I don't deserve this, all that are low vibrational words, and they belong to low emotion. Now, when you put together a word, okay, with the emotion, with color, and the result of that comes in, into either lower, you know, heavy vibrational negative energy or positive ones. Was that clear?
Yes, it is. And you know what? I always think to people when I say, people will call me and they'll say, I'm depressed. I'm in a terrible place. I must be awfully depressed. And they sit in there and they're crying and everything. And I said, what are you doing today? Oh, I'm just sitting here, you know, thinking. And I said, well, that's holding you in the place in which you're in. So I would always tell people, you get 1 hour to, you know, that are really bad. I would say to them, you get 1 hour to be, quote, depressed, sad, angry, or whatever. And at 9:01 in the morning, you're going to use the rest of your day to not be that. So then you would have 23 hours of reflecting on the other side of the energy versus the lower energy.
Yeah.
And what I found that
I gave,
yeah, and what I found was that at the end of the week or end of 2, 3, or 4 weeks, eventually they would say, you know, I sat there for the whole hour and all I could think about was what I was going to do next. I didn't have any more of that negative energy. So they in actuality have transformed their energy. And people just don't understand that it's as simple as that. And that's what you're saying, you know, move from one to the other. We're not saying some big cosmos words. You have to sit down and meditate and have an altar and incense and all this other stuff, you know, and click your fingers and you're going to hear this big gong in the, you know, and you know, in your imagination. What we're just saying is just feel different. Just look
and be aware.
And outlook
and be aware,
different.
You know, be aware of what you're feeling. That you have the power to transform. One time I was giving in the theater here in for Dade County a workshop, which then I gave in a cruise ship. And, you know, I brought people up to show them about how colors can really affect our lives. And one of the things I told them was that when you're feeling like that, for example, you ask her, what are you doing? In a point, I would ask that person, what are you wearing? What color are you wearing? And usually when you're depressed, you have a tendency to go to the closet for the black or the dark blue or the dark green, you know, colors that would contain somehow, you know, dark within them. Mm-hmm. Or the negation of light, if you want to call it that way. But so one of the exercises I give to people is, go to your closet, change your clothing for the color you least want to wear at that point, orange, yellow, bright color.
Mm-hmm.
And usually people don't want to do it because it's a way of taking them out of that situation. And this is something I say in the book, you know, it's in the book. And I'm teaching people how to get out there and get out of, you know, patterns that we have. And there's many ways, you know, how to really move out of a situation. So once you put another color, first of all, I made you move. And
right.
It took you, you know, a little bit of energy to get up, to go to your closet. And then if you think about it and you analyze it, sometimes to take out the black, sometimes there's a resistance within us. Because there's a law of attraction within us that if we're depressed, we will choose depression things around us. So just the situation of wearing a yellow or a red, a bright red, would really take them off for a second and out of that space.
And, you know, I think, too, when they put those clothes on, what that does is if someone sees them, it attracts another energetic person to you. Another person may speak to you and say, oh, that's nice. So in other words, it's kind of opening up your energy fields instead of closing them down and holding them in that negative space, because they themselves, those colors themselves, carry that energy. I know for myself, I mean, my wardrobe used to be pink, fuchsia, and orange. I didn't own a black thing in I never owned a black thing in my closet, you know. However, for the past several years, you know, it was different, and people tried to shunt me into this process of this is what you need to, quote, appear like to be able to be accepted like, to be for what you're trying to portray yourself as. And I fought that and fought that and fought that for the past 10 years. And I said, you know what? Here goes the clothes again. I'm going back to orange. Blonde hair is coming back, you know. I don't care. I'm putting on the purple dress. You know, it's like because I always was that. It's just that that was more reflecting that they felt I should be wearing a mask every day to appear and present to other people, you know, a certain
picture. That's exactly
picture.
A painting I'm doing nowadays. You see a mask, and you see the mask smiling. And when I put on the black light, the mask is crying. How many times we move our lives? We say yes, and we mean no. And that moment, we get upset with a person, but in reality, we're upset with ourselves because we fall into something we didn't want to fall into.
Right. And that is definitely the truth because I can't tell you how many people would say to me, you know, you need to wear black, dark brown, and these dark greens. And I just simply, when I put them on, it just never worked for me, and it just wasn't it. Or when I let my hair, like I've been blonde, I was born a blonde, and then I've always said blonde. But when I let it go back to brown, it was like, I'm so dark. I'm dark, and you could feel the darkness. And I think sometimes, though, we need to feel that. We need to be in that space so that we can recognize where we are, so that we will know this is us and this is not others, but this is also not where we want to be. You know, sometimes people will rush through these things. They'll say, oh, well, that doesn't feel good, but then they won't recognize the entire story around it, and then only for it to repeat later on to be able to, you know, in other words, it's like that thing that keeps coming, weeds, they keep coming out of the ground until you finally look down and see where they're coming from, you know. You really need to be able to look at that because otherwise they will rear their heads later on.
Yeah, well, that's where confusion is born.
Yeah. And what confusion that is, you know. I do have a question for you on your, I think it's the third lesson about reflections. You say about pain and suffering as a choice, but then also strength. And I also think about, like, cancer patients. And they say, well, I'm going to find the strength to fight it. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on that, because my thoughts are always that a fight, not really, that's just not, that's not going to resonate with where you want or where you'll be. I don't know, the word it's almost like a black color to me. It just doesn't fit. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
In the book, there's a constant to show people that there's a big difference between pain and suffering. And that big difference is pain is something you cannot avoid. So, for example, somebody of your family dies, but you have pain, and you have to live through the pain. It's a process, and you have to go through the process. But then, you know, the process is over. And then I hang up to the pain, but the pain really went through a process, and it's already closed that process. And then I start suffering. And suffering has a very big attraction with the ego. Why? Because suffering, the constant suffering can make us victims. The constant suffering, it's not the same as pain. Again, pain has a cycle. Suffering doesn't. And we can drag suffering all our lives and have it by our sides like a cane. And we become dependent on the suffering to call the attention of others or, you know, not to get the strength within us. So we have to be very aware that there's a big difference between pain and suffering.
Well, but then when I think about the word strength, in relation to, let's say, cancer. I think of people saying, I'm going to have the strength. And when I close my eyes, I see a person standing up with that ball and chain, and they're swinging it around their head saying, I'm going to fight. And when they fight, they're saying, I'm going to keep everything away from me. In other words, it almost seems like a rebound of, well, maybe I'm totally looking at this wrong, but it almost seems like a rebound of ego that they're better than. And I'm not quite sure how that fits.
I see it a little different than you. I see it that sometimes when a person got cancer, in a way, is because either we followed something in life when we fall into it, we had a short circuit in our lives, or we, in a way, created that short circuit. But I would really think, and I admire people who stand up and have the strength to say, I will fight it, because it means I will overcome it. I will not stay here, you know, in the floor. I will stand up. That's the way I see that taking that strength and saying, if it's within me, and a lot of these people who have survived cancer, you see them right away going within and working within for the first time themselves.
Yeah, and to be careful too, because like I said about then, it does bring the strength from within for them, but they don't want to be an ego or a judger, because that will take them just a little bit too hardened sometimes. You know, I always think of the people that have gotten sick and they said, I'm going to fight it. And then when it comes back, it's almost like it double defeats them.
Then, you know, I would think that a double one would also give a fighter or somebody even more strength, because we were talking about the two forces, the light and the shadow, no? And the two forces are forces. You know, it's not that one is weaker than the other. The weak, the strength is where we see. If I turn to see and give my energy to the darkness, I'm making the darkness stronger. If I turn to see the light and give my energy to the light, well, which is stronger?
Yeah. And being able to... Yeah, to shine that light to be able to do that and to transform that darkness,
And all this are alchemists, you know, and again, all this has been taught to me through my art and as portals, because it's unbelievable how the creative forces can take a human being to other levels of awareness and just give us, you know, that knowledge. And like they say, you know, that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. No, and it doesn't matter if it's a person or a book or a song or a play, it'll appear.
And we have to be willing to allow it. But we have to be willing to allow it in, too, because a lot of people that have gotten very hardened and very dark say, oh, well, yes, you know, I'll transform it into the light. And it's kind of almost like lip service, you know. You really have to let it in and allow that. And that would bring us probably to the talk where you're saying about the spiritual heart. You know, what is really the center of our being? Is it a heart? Is it soul? Is it spirit? Is it energy? What is it? Or does it really even matter? But all of these words people are using, you know, are they interchangeable?
Yeah, of course they are. The same as the energy side, you know. When I see, or I myself wake up, let's say, and I get a low, I get a thought that's low, you know, right away I try to convert it into a high. And yes, they are interchangeable. And yes, we are the ones who have to want that change. If not, it doesn't happen.
Interesting. Yeah, because so many people are just not sure, you know, what that really means there. And I can tell you, with people with that have heart disease or have heart problems, a lot of times they would say, you know, that my heart is broken or my heart isn't working. And what are they really saying? That their spirit is diminishing, or they're not feeling, you know, that their life was of value, which a lot of people have at life end, right?
Well, and if you think about it, it's really amazing that it really is hurting. You know, I've gone through deaths, and really your heart aches. And it's really not the physical heart, it's the spiritual heart. And you can feel it. You can feel a void. You can feel an emptiness. You can feel, you know, the pain there. And it is very important that we recognize we're human beings, and the high is as important as the low. I don't know if you saw the part of the burden of life, which is chapter 4 in the book, and that's exactly, you know, one of the things that this lesson is meant to help people, you know, walk through, which is, how do we stand again, you know, how do we walk through life? And
right.
Here I have like a few things that I wrote. The purpose of life is not to have achieved success by the end of our lives, but to succeed as we live. Every human being is unique. Our thoughts inside actions, our actions manifest reality. We alone are responsible for our own actions. There's nobody to blame. So as we move through all this and we understand that we are creating now everything that's going to come in the future, there's no past. There's present, and in the present we're creating the future moment. So at that point, if we understand that, you know, then we can have a more broad spectrum of the power that's within us to create or co-create our lives.
You know, so many times I have said this on the show, and it's pretty much my mantra now, where I always say that God does not sign for UPS. You are not bringing your baggage. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so many people think that all of this crap and all of those masks and all of this stuff is what it is that if all of that is whisked away, what would you be left with? And so many people would say they would crumble. And I can tell you, with all of the natural disasters in the world, I mean, I live in New Orleans, and yes, I stayed for Hurricane Katrina, and yes, we had losses. And it was rather devastating, and I can tell you that took the wind out of my sail. It took the spirit totally out. It was gone for a long time, and it took a long time to figure out how to relight that inner candle. And that happened for a lot of people, you know, and to realize that all of this stuff and all of these things and all of everything, there really is nothing. I mean, I can close my eyes and say, I'm standing on a corner with nothing. That, and so many people cannot conceive of that. I know after the storm, people would say to me, go to the internet and check stuff out. I saw it on there. I said, there's no internet. Well, go to the I said, I don't have any internet at home. You know, it's not working. And they'd be like, well, go to the library. Use it there. It's free there. I said, don't you understand there's no libraries? Well, there has to be something someplace. And it's like, no, the answer is no, there doesn't have to be anything. And when you use that phrase, that there doesn't have to be anything, how so many people cannot conceive that that may be the reality, that there isn't any of that, and that isn't what it's all about, and how easily that can be taken away or whisked away. I mean, you see people after disasters running to help people, but they're always bringing stuff. It's like suffering stuff, you know. You're not going to feed that part of them that doesn't need to be fed, you know. Sit with them and conceive and do other things for them and to just plain be with them, because that's where the real healing and answers are. It has nothing to do about how many bottles of water you send them or how many pairs of shoes, you know. and and how different that is, you know. So I think, you know, what you say in the book is great. It's all about transforming and everything, and it is hard for people. They will have a lot of confusion and chaos, but then eventually they'll say, I'm just going to allow, you know, I'm just going to be present in myself and just see where it takes me. And that's just being open to move, right?
Yeah, now that you said that, and it's beautiful how you're showing people that through a moment of chaos, through a moment of, like, you know, the lesson of storms of life, you turn it around to understand that in reality there was much more than just things.
Yeah.
Because at that point you were taken to another level where you saw that, and probably you saw compassion, you saw love, you saw unity within people. You know, many things happen when storms hit us. And one of the things is in the ego. I have a whole chapter dedicated to the ego because I feel there's a lot of confusion just with the word, you know, just with understanding really what the ego, and I hope that through that lesson people will really for the first time be clear with what it is, how you can move the ego, how you can move above it and use it. And one of the things that I wrote there was that, well, it was really given to me, was that when you're reading this, you know, you will maybe feel like you want to go to sleep. Well, it's the ego putting you up to sleep because the ego does not want to be discovered. So every storm comes into our lives to uncover things that have to be removed, you know, and used that, or trashed, so we can move to higher levels of consciousness. We are human, but we have the capacity of being divine as well. And this is a time that people need to learn how to awaken that divinity within them.
And it's a very hard lesson, and it shouldn't be, but I think that's where we are in the generations. I know after the storms and stuff, or after any, you know, issue of people losing their homes, that's a perfect example. And they're yelling and screaming at banks and government and people and neighbors and everything that they have to have that house and that it is them, you know. And all that really is a payment and a bunch of stuff. You know, you can walk away and it doesn't define you. It does not make you, but it's really hard to see that loss. And what they're really saying, if you really stripped it down, is they don't feel safe. They don't have a base and they don't feel stability. So isn't that much different than saying, I have to have my house and doing that with anger, instead saying, you know, with openness, I need stability, I need safety, and I need a place of comfort. How can I find that? That's totally a different story.
Yeah, one of the things that's in the book is that if you think you are the watch, or you're wearing, or you think you are the car you're driving, how devaluated you are, because the soul is worth much more.
Yeah.
And that's where our true value is. Again, are we seeing the true value? No, because we think that everything we see is through the physical eyes. And that's why I came along with new techniques of invisibility, to show people that we have the capacity to go beyond that visibility. And we are much more than we think we are.
Yeah, and it's so different to be able to see just with different eyes. You know, I say to myself, I said the other day, I think I'm totally addicted to clouds. I've been my entire life, you know. When I walk out, when I walk out, I look up. When I'm driving in the car, I'm looking up. When I'm doing anything, I look up. When I open a window, I look up. And I had said this to somebody recently, and they said, really? I always look down. And I was like, whoa,
God. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just almost incredible, the idea. And that just can't, I mean, I was standing still and it just felt like a big wave hit me. It was incredible when someone says that. So I think to the listeners, you know, what Jacqueline and I were saying is that this is just a new language. I always come from one side and I like to bring out what other people may be thinking, because, you know, this words and this vocabulary and how to form sentences and be able to make it into a story is something that is so new that when we're in the midst of all that swamp crap or all of that midst of all that pain and anguish, or things are changing so rapidly and you're just standing there saying, you know, go ahead, hit me again, I'm ready, you know. And that's where a lot of people are. And so it's just to show that there is hope, there is faith, there is spirit, there is soul, there is energy, so things can shift. And to know that you can shift. So to the listeners, you know, if you'd like to find out more information about Jacqueline's book, it is listed on today's show page. You just click on the bottom, and it'll take you directly to her website. And it's very important to be able to connect with something. You know, read the book, take a few words, read one page, you know, read two pages, look at the pictures, and you'll get a connection into the words and say, gosh, that word is just really what I feel like now. Suffering. I feel victimized. I feel enslaved. I feel great. I mean, you know, what does truth mean? I don't know what that means. And free will, are you kidding me? You know, I've never had that. So this are words that will start to inspire us and be able to bring us forth, you know, into the future, I think. And Jacqueline, I think that, you know, the book is wonderful for everyone. It's not age bound, you know, it's ageless, you know, so many people can read this and say, that sounds really cool, you know, interesting. You know that old adage that you say, I heard it somewhere? Well, I think when you read something in here, you could say, I'll remember that. And then, you know, maybe a few days, few weeks, few months, you say, someone just said that. I heard that. I read that in a book. And that's, I think, what the real goal is of the book. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. You know, the real goal is to be a bridge, to take humanity to the next stage that the universe is already taking us, and the only way that we can move together with the universe and the high vibrations that are already ruling our world and the universe is to understand, how can I take my own vibrations, clean myself from the lower ones, and bring myself to those higher ones? That's part of the mission of this book, and my art, of course.
Well, Jacqueline, thank you so much for being our guest today. It was an absolutely wonderful hour. I can't believe we just kept going and going. We didn't
stop. It was beautiful, really. Flowing beautifully. Thank you. It's really a pleasure and an honor to have talked to you.
Thank you so much for being with us. And I know the listeners would enjoy your art. It is something that you look at it, and you will look at it over and over and over again. It's not something that's what I call flatlined. It doesn't just, you know, jump and it hits you and you're on to the next thing. It definitely has a lot of depth and, you know, information in her art, so it is something you will definitely enjoy. So, Jacqueline, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, and I look forward to having more conversations with you.
Great. That would be wonderful. And you know what? I think I would love to probably even have you on maybe in a few months again, because I think the language, once the words start to root in other people, the world is moving so fast, you just never know. People will say, now I'm ready to hear that word again.
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And yes, I hope that by then some of the people who are listening to us give themselves an opportunity to read the book, to awaken to new dimensional, you know, consciousness, awareness points, and just help, you know, as one candle, we can lighten so many candles, and really our children deserve a world of peace and love for us to inherit to them.
And that's absolutely true. So thank you so much. I think we're both doing our parts.
Yes, it's beautiful. Thank you. I really, truly enjoy being here with you.
Great. And have a great day.
You too. God bless.
So if anybody would like more information about Jacqueline and her book and be able to know where to purchase it, the link is on today's show page. The book is called The Art of Healing Art, The Keys to Power and Awareness, and it's by Jacqueline Ripstein, and it is definitely a wonderful book. And I'm telling you, granted, everything these days is on electronics, but hey, this is a book you want in paper. This is a book you want to be able to go and hold in your hand. It's something that you want to just have next to your bed and just flip it open. You could carry it in your purse or your briefcase. I'm telling you, you will absolutely love it. And you know what? When someone else sees that you're looking at it, they'll say, "What's that word? I don't know what that means. Tell me more." And therein, the conversation begins. So thank you so much for being with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a wonderful evening.